Good morning. Welcome to the FTS bet slip on Monday, the 7th of December. The only thing that may interfere with today, I've got a dishwasher engineer coming. So if he arrives in the next 5 minutes, I'll have to pause this and return to it. The old dishwasher's gone kaput. Need to get that sorted before the festive period, as we've got a few round for Christmas. Only three households are only allowed. Three households. Don't break the rules. Fucking hell, where are we at? You lot are getting smarter, see? You thought I was going to open up with singing, didn't you? But you're getting smarter, see? Just what somebody puts on Twitter, I'll fast forward to 1 minute 47 and you miss it all. I'm just going to throw it in anywhere. I could just throw it in. It's Mindset Monday. I might just throw it right in the middle of the bit where I'm talking about staking. So you've got a decision to make. We already know we've lost, 25-50? Because the old gooners won't be tuning in today, have we? Hey, we'll talk about it in a minute. Right, I've got to get the old pod horses out the way first. 1 o'clock, that's 1-0, we have two. North London is ours, and what a belter, Sonny. That's in the 1-0, the 1 o'clock. And then in the 2 o'clock, that's 2-0, we have three. Fuck off back to Woolwich. Where's your party gone? And Kane Cracker. Beautiful. Only joking. Those people looking them up now. They're in the Racing Post. I can't find fuck off back to Woolwich. happy days. Oh, happy days. Arsenal won the crosses, though. Don't let yourself. They won the crosses, didn't they? They 30-odd crosses. They did win the crosses. North London is ours. North London is ours. Fuck off back to Woolwich. North London is ours. I love the saltiness. Don't get me wrong. I have been a critique of Mourinho over the past. Not so much how he's played football, because the guy's a winner, but how he's acted at times. I think the time when he ran behind Pellegrini's thing when he was at Man City, that really wound me up. And when he played Spurs with United and did that with his ear, those things irritated me without a doubt. But when he came to Spurs, I said the guy is a winner. And I love now the saltiness from people talking about that. You're talking about a club now, Tottenham, not serial winners, that have played City, Chelsea and Arsenal and not conceded a goal. And it's what Jose does. You got Jamie Redknapp saying the only reason they're winning is because they've got two good players. I mean, how does he get fucking paid? Talks absolute shite. You get yourselves 2-0 up. The onus is not on us to score any more goals. We don't need to score any more goals. It is to put them to the sword. Basically, we said to Arsenal yesterday, we got our two goals. You've only scored 10 all season. Fuck me, we got a player on the pitch, Sonny, who scored that himself this season. Come and get your three goals. Personally, I love the way he's making them dig in and be solid. It's what Spurs have not had for years under any manager. How many saves did Lloris make yesterday? One from Lacazette, was that it? They're the third highest scorers in the league. All this, they don't score goals. They're third highest scorers in the league. They conceded the least. Again, I'll go back. I'll use golf a lot, obviously, because I played it to half decent stand. It's like a golf tournament. You can't win it in the first round, but you can certainly lose it. Jose is nurturing a football club that has won nothing for 30 years or more of any note. The loser mentality is ingrained. We've got our own word for it, Spursy. They get so far, never deliver. This lot, again, may get there and never deliver. I'm not saying they're going to win anything. But he knew coming into, and we've never played Chelsea, City, Arsenal 3 weeks running in the Premier League before at all. He knew coming into those three fixtures that if you come out of them with 1, 2, 3 points, which could easily be done, you know, you could lose to City. That's easily done. Everybody loses to City. Lose away to Chelsea, a ground we've historically done poorly at, and maybe draw win Arsenal. You come out of it with, you know, 1 point, 3 points. You are 6, 7 points behind Liverpool already, and it is game over. Love him or hate him, he has done brilliantly over these three fixtures. Some may not enjoy it, but the bollocks that's going around, Tottenham aren't going to play like that against every team. They put 5 past Southampton, 6 past Man United, 3 past West Ham, dominated game against Newcastle. Some of these games they didn't win through naivety. But watching that yesterday, watching Holberg in the second half, it was like a masterclass for me. I thought it was an absolute masterclass. They literally said, all you can do is cross the ball. Come and have a go. See how that works out for you. Holberg, I say, brilliant. Absolute, almost Conte-like. Fantastic, fantastic signing. Alderweireld for me, just I think he's fabulous. You know, yes, we all want to see goals. We want to see Bale tearing down the wing. But he's a fabulous defender to watch, Toby Alderweireld. Fabulous defender to watch. Suggsy will back me up. I was absolutely staggered when he had his 25 million release clause that nobody bought him. You know, when you think that Archie fraud, Pochettino bought Davinson Sanchez for 42 million. I mean, I could go right in on him at the minute. There's still some cult-like Spurs fans who still want him back. He spent 42 million on Davinson Sanchez, for fuck's sake. You know, at least Mourinho, that's what, another reason why I admire him. He's realised that Winks and Sanchez are fucking useless. But the fraud bought him, didn't play Toby. Toby Alderweireld, for me, my opinion, is the best central defender in the league over the last four or five seasons for consistency. I'm not saying he's the best there is now, but week in, week out, over the last four or five years, he has been, for me, the best. And I could not, I was amazed we kept him. I couldn't understand that United didn't buy him for 25 million. And I was over the moon with it. I just think he's done an absolute masterclass. I think the only thing that could come out of these fixtures, if we come out with 1, 2, 3 points, everybody would have been saying, oh, that's that again. I think what he did and the way he's done it is absolutely brilliant. You don't need to go and get 4 or 5 goals. That's what we did against West Ham. And then you give up holes and they score goals. You know, there is a fragile mentality at Spurs, no matter what's been said. I think he's managed it absolutely brilliantly. That's why I like the guy. He's a winner. Whatever your views on him, he is an absolute winner. And I'm not saying that he'll win something with Spurs. You know, I agree with him when he says that getting that United second that year was one of his greatest achievements. And you look at the United side either, you know, and around that. If he does anything with this Spurs side, you know, even if he got them up finishing second, it would be fantastic. You know, we had the RG fraud or philosophy, painful rebuild, just talking fucking verbiage of bollocks that he used to come out with week in, week out. The word philosophy coming out of his mouth every time. This guy comes out one game at a time. We're enjoying it. We're on the top of the league and looking down on the nation. And the only explanation I can find is Jose's at the wheel. See, I can't help myself. Whenever I say the words we're on top of the league, it just leads into that. But he's done an absolute, for me, the way he's handled these three fixtures, superb. I still think Chelsea, if they played Giroud, would have beaten us. We might have got a bit fortunate there. They did an absolute job on Kane, Chelsea, which Arsenal didn't do yesterday. They stopped him getting that ball. But to come out of it with 7 points, knowing you've got, you know, Palace away isn't easy, Liverpool up next, you've got to hang in the game. And I think he's been brilliant at it. And I love the fact that everybody's getting salty about it. I love saltiness. So what else we had? We had over 2.5 at Nantes yesterday to lose Saturday. Tottenham win, which I said. Chelsea win. I got the rubber ball completely wrong as they got pasted by Palace. That looks worrying. City was low risk, no real damage. United laid a back. Would have been if you did it. So no real, not a dreadful weekend for you pod listeners. Those of you just listened to this and used this. Hopefully you did okay. Sad to see that Peter Alice passed away yesterday. Fantastic commentator, the voice of golf for me. I think he was absolutely brilliant at it. I absolutely loved it, even when Sky got the Masters, and I still used to flick over and watch the BBC. I'm not a fan of Sky golf coverage at all. I think it's fucking dreadful, the commentating. But then again, I grew up listening to Alice, so I just got used to it, maybe. I'm a bit young for the sort of Henry Longhurst days. He was sort of in the early part of my tiny childhood, but I just have fond memories of listening to Alice, watching, you know, I sort of religiously used to watch the Open for all 4 days, watching the greatest tournament in the world, listening to Alice. It'll be sorely missed. And when I, you know, a few texts yesterday, oh, rest in peace Peter Alice, I text somebody who and they're a bit of a trumper, and they came back to me, oh, Alice was sexist, this, that and the other. And I just thought, here we go. You can't comment on anything now, can you? I have no idea what Peter Alice was like. Reports of him being a bit sexist fundamentally disagree with it. My only comment was, I thought he was a good golf commentator. He was good at his job, in my opinion. If he was a misogynist, etc., of course I don't condone that, but you can't comment on anything. I know him as a good golf commentator. I know, it's a bit like... I don't know, remembering a shop assistant for giving you good service. I come home and I say to Sam, well, that guy in the pet shop today, really good guy, great service I got. I don't say to the guy in the pet shop, hang on a minute, mate, I want to go home and make a compliment about you to my wife, but before I do, can you just fill in this survey? Have you ever made a racist statement, been sexist, misogynistic, no, homophobic? You just don't do that and cover all your bases so that you can feel free to pay somebody a compliment. Peter Alice, for me, was a very good golf commentator. That's it. Good at his job. Talking of shop, best service I've ever had was in Tiffany in Oxford Street, Regent Street, whichever one of those it's on. And a woman in there, I can still remember a picture. She was absolutely superb. Bit of a story, actually. Not my usual sort of store. I was like a fish out of water, and that's why I sort of remember it so much. And I didn't come home. I said to Sam a few days later, when I was able to, how good the woman had been. I didn't get the woman to fill in a character survey before I passed that comment. But yeah, no, Sam and I, we're not into bling and jewellery. We don't even wear wedding rings, which people find weird, but we never have. We exchanged them, got home, put them in the safe, and it's been like that ever since. Just irritate me wearing stuff like that on my hands. But as she, in the year of her 50th birthday, she has got a couple of rings. In the year of her 50th birthday, she saw a picture of a ring in Tiffany that she liked, sort of hinting. And I thought, oh, that might make a good 50th present. So I sort of stored it in my head. Well, in those years, it was her birthday, January the 1st. This was like sort of the March. So pre-Christmas, and it literally was like the 22nd, might have been the 23rd, I think. I thought, that's what I'm going to get at. So I found the picture and I sneaked up to Oxford Street or wherever it is to buy it. Busy, obviously, new birthdays, New Year's. So this was, I think it was the 23rd, really busy. So it's not something I usually buy. So I thought, use your brain. They're going to ask me what size she is. I have absolutely no idea. So I made the excuse that I was going up to London to put Brett's on for my mate because they needed help. I sneaked into her jewellery box, grabbed a ring, and took it with me, thinking I've got this sussed right up. Yeah. Got up there, found the ring that she liked. As I say, this woman came and who was excellent and helped me. And I said, I've liked that ring for my wife. This is her size. And gave her the ring I'd taken out of the jewellery box. I thought, I'm all over this now. This is absolutely beautiful. As she's looked at it, she's put it on that thing that they do, that long spiky thing. And she said, it's probably got a name for it, but I don't know what it is. And she said, it's quite big. But being clueless, I didn't think anything of it. Sam had sort of had a career gardening. I thought all that manual labour, pruning bushes or whatever, perhaps she's got little paddy sausage fingers, I don't know. So I paid for the ring, took it back indoors, go to put Sam's ring back in the box. And as I did so, just sort of, obviously I've got that comment stuck in the back of my head that the shop assistant made. I dropped the ring in the box and I couldn't help but notice that the ring I dropped in the box was a lot bigger than other rings. She'd only got two or three in there. So I picked one up and had a look at it and I thought, well, they are significantly different size. I thought, oh, well, hang on a minute. Rings on different fingers. Fingers are different sizes. Perhaps I've got this, what fingers she going to wear it on? Perhaps I've got this wrong. So I thought, fuck, what do I do now? I sat and sort of ummed and ahed all day, really. What do I do? Which finger will she wear it on? I can't ask her. All the others, then I went and had a look, and as I say, she hasn't got many. They all were the smaller size. I thought, I'll fuck this up here. I'm going to have to go back. So I went back up, and it was Christmas Eve, so the first one was the 23rd. So I went up, and I'm now sweating about this, because I'm thinking, shit, if they haven't got her size, I'm done, because... we had a lot of people booked in for Christmas, and because it was her 50th, lots of people come in. There wasn't going to be another chance for me to get up there and sort this out. A birthday present for her 50th. So I went in. Fortunately, the woman who'd served me was there, and I went up and explained the situation to her. She said, yeah, it is big. She said, I think you'd be better getting the smaller one. But she was absolutely brilliant. She let me take both. So basically, she said, take both. I've got your credit card number. And then return the one that is wrong. And obviously, if you don't return it, we'll bill your card. You know, you're talking, I'm not being flash. This was a nice four-figure ring. I'm just thinking, she doesn't know me from Adam. She's absolutely superb, this woman. Brilliant. Didn't give her a character check, but she was absolutely brilliant. So I went home, and 50th birthday on New Year's Eve, we did it all. Had a load of people. I did an elaborate game of pass the parcel, which ended up with Sam. You know, I put some presents for other people in, but ended up with Sam getting the final one, which was the ring. Smooth, and I'm just smooth. See, there's wives listening to this going, why doesn't my husband do things like that? And I'd put the small one in the box in the middle, and she opened it up, tears, put it on, amazing, fantastic, husband of the year. But now I can ask about sizes. So I said to her, I'm not sure whether I've got this right. And she put it on, loved it. I said, and I explained the story. I said, I took one of the rings out your boxes up to the guy, up to the Tiffany's, up to the woman, and she put it on the thing. And the ring I'd taken just happened to be her deceased father's wedding ring. She only had three or four, and I managed to take her deceased father's wedding ring, which I didn't even know she had, which was in this box, and that's why it was so big. Yes, but it was great service without a character assassination, and for me, Peter Alice was a great golf commentator, and I doesn't forego any of the sins he committed in his 80-odd years. Just a thought, none of us are perfect, eh? We're always too quick to have a go at people, aren't we? We're on the top of the league and looking down on the nation and the only... Oh, they're ringing off. Oh, when's he going to get to the mindset bit? Where do we have to fast forward, Liverpool fans? We've got a new thing, haven't we? We've now got a new thing in football. Brand new, only invented last night. Joint top. You're not first and second anymore. You're joint top. When's joint top ever been a thing? We're joint top. No, you're not. You're fucking second. Score a few more goals, play a bit more free-flowing football like Jose, and you may be top. Joint top. But they fucking invent anything now, don't they? Dear me, dear me. We're on the top of the... North London is ours. North London is ours. Fuck off back to Woolwich. North London is ours. There'll be somebody enjoying this. I'm enjoying it. Right, Mindset Monday. Just another Mindset Monday. Ooh. It's all gone very quiet in the chat as well. They folded like a pack of cards, all crying into their milk. Imagine being an Arsenal or Celtic supporter today, eh? Arsenal or Celtic, honestly. Get the Arsenal. Saying old Jimmy Carrigan on Twitter, the Arsenal Celtic half and half. Can wrap themselves up. Right, Mindset Monday. Great Zoom yesterday. Did a sort of live trading Zoom for, well, best part of 2 hours with Ultimate Members. The Ultimate Members who could tell the time that was. Talked about my setup, types of trades, went through a few sheets. Hopefully some found it worthwhile. I like doing it. One, trading at times, I think somebody put in there, it's a lonely old game. It's actually quite nice to talk to people. There is a lot of dead time when you put bets on, waiting for goals, nothing happening. So, and it always provokes thought in me. You know, the questions I get asked, and I learn quite a lot about people just from the questions they ask and this, that and the other. I think the next sort of phase of this Mindset Monday, I know we sort of got into a bit of a rant last week. It isn't so much why you bet, and I've talked a lot about what was your plan and getting set up. But a lot of it comes down to the element of how you bet. And one of the questions I was asked yesterday, saying, knowing what I know now, if I was starting now, you know, how would I go about it? Compared to when I started in the early 2000s. And I say to everybody that I do any form of sort of help, mentoring or whatever, I say, people always focus on, you know, you'll look at Sykov, you'll look at Peter Webb, you'll look at me, you'll look at anybody else who's winning money, whatever it may be, and you focus on that as opposed to focusing on being me in 2006, 2007, which in most cases is where people are. Not everybody, but I'm just saying there. And the desire for people, because, you know, particularly with the likes of people like Sykov, people, you know, he posts massive numbers. Even Gurdy, you know, occasionally posts massive numbers. The desire to win those amounts, I think, overrides anything and all thought of process. And you get the fear of missing out, betting with scared money, inability to accept losers. Currently, for example, I'm on a run of 12 or 13 loss. First half goals lost, you know, it happens. I'm not in the slightest bit phased about it. It happens. Staking issues, chasing all the usual problems that we know about one or more surface, as there's no thought to process, only this thought of the sort of final outcome, the winning, and concerned more with, you know, what others are doing. Again, I was asked a question about other people, and I genuinely don't pay any attention to it. Whether people believe that or not, I get most of the stuff I get told people are talking about me and this, that, and the other. And you get to a stage and you go, right, well, what's being said? If it's defamatory, if it's of a state that I think that's crossing the line, as you know, I do something about it. And that's a process I'm at the minute with. Individual or individuals. It's not oh, he said such and such about it. You know, that's going to go on, but this concern with what other people are doing, I think far too much. You know, I've talked about it a lot, but if I was starting now, if somebody sort of asked that question fundamentally, if I was starting now, I would look to master one market, get a process, get a way to bet it, and whatever it may be, lay the draw, second half goals, over one half. And I would focus, and I think a starting point for you guys, you know, I've talked 100 days. I think 100 days with some people is too ambitious. 30 days just doing exactly the same thing. And most of you would do better than you do now, but you're actually learning about it. Prices, price movements, how to get in that market. Is dripping better than a single bet? When to enter, what to do on a red card? Often get asked that. When to exit for a loss. All are parts of process, nothing to do with a selection. If you don't know what you're going to do when a red card is shown, you haven't got a process. If you don't know whether you're going to drip bet all the time, you haven't got a process. If you don't know you're going to single bet all the time, if you don't know whether you're going to take your liability out or whether you're going to green up, you haven't got a process. The selections become irrelevant. You've got to have a process, particularly trading. Not just talking putting bets on a game, particularly if you're sitting there trading. But the reality, certainly from my perspective, and I might be wrong, but it's my perspective of seeing people, is people try and bet every market, do everything, and succeed in none. And I've always sort of wondered, you know, and I've said it many times, you know, and I know there's people who laugh about it and say you can't make money laying the draw. I made good money for 3 years laying the draw. There's people still now making money laying the draw, trading. Some people laying it fixed odds. I've got something fixed odds that's won 100 odd points in the last 12 months laying the draw. All runs on auto. Don't touch it. Goes up and down, but it's 100 odd points up. That's what I did for 3 years and nothing else. I'd cut out anything else I was listening to and did it. But why, if you can't make money doing that, what, you know, if I hadn't made money doing that and I couldn't do it, what would make me think that I could suddenly make money back in over 2.5 goals, as an example? What is going to be different in that than what I did there? Unless I go about it all differently and put some process around it, I can't see what is possibly going to change. But people do. And why did it, you know, if I didn't make money lying the draw, why did it fail? That's the big question. Where did it fail? And to use the phrase again, reacting to short-termism. You know, that's what a lot of it is. Championship win rate currently 39%. Average goals, Premier League now under 3. Just saying. So why, if you changed method, changed sites, changed providers, changed info, changed bets, what is it that will change? And I sort of, you know, you think about, got an analogy for it. Be like waking up one day and you say to your wife, partner, husband, whatever it may be, you wake up one day, I've had enough, you know, whatever. You might be a driver for DPD, you've had enough of doing it. You know, Amazon are just putting you under too much pressure. I've had enough. I'm giving up my job, love. I'm going to open a sweet shop. And they turn around and go, fantastic, brilliant, so pleased for you, good, fully supportive. So you put a load of work in, you do market research in something you're interested in, you find a site, you invest in your shop fitting, you do get your business rates sorted out, stock, perhaps hire a member of staff, you get it all pristine, spick and span, you've got a lovely sweet shop, let's say get to September the 1st, and you've got a financial forecast, you're going to take 10K through the door, and then you open your doors, off you go, and then you get to the 30th of September and your financial forecast said you're going to take 10K and you've only taken 6K. So you wake up on the 1st of October and you go to your partner, no good this, I'm going to start selling cars today. That's how I look at it. You don't say, why did I only take 6K? What was the process? What could have gone wrong? What was it? Was it footfall? Was it stock? Was it pricing? Was it competition? You don't do any of that. You just go, oh, well, I've changed. I'll do something else now. You just wouldn't do it. You just wouldn't do it. And that's the way it is. So that's how I see it. It's just a lack of joined up thinking, particularly when it comes to betting. And you know, I learn from losses, you learn from losses, we learn from bad runs as much as when we're winning. You need to focus on process. And sure, what you bet is part of that process, but how you bet is a key part of it. And staking is part of that process. Most people know how I stake and how I increase my stakes. Fixed odds betting, most people know I drip in my money when I'm trading. You know, it's not hidden. I talk about that all the time. That is my process. It may not suit some. You've got to work out what is the best process for you. Some people just a straight one bet is what suits them. But you also need to be aware that over time, as this works, and again, I'm talking 2-3 years, not talking 2 months, oh, we didn't win this month, 2-3 years, that at some stage, if you get it working, then you need to scale it up and having a plan for doing so. I'm taking some people through that at the minute, and to be fair, they've been great. I've got a plan for doing it. I'm sticking to that plan and a mindset for doing it, bad run, good run, whatever it may be. And I mentioned a couple of weeks ago about a talk I did in Italy, and it comes back to my mind quite a lot, this. I've done quite a few talks in Italy. First one I did, I don't know, was 2013-14, when Betfair IT was starting their own Italian site, and I was flown over to Milan. It was quite funny. I don't know whether anyone watches The Office. There's an episode in The Office where he does a talk, and he puts on like a beatbox was Simply the Best or something on it. I think it's Simply the Best. Well, I was introduced into this room with Simply the Best playing. That's what it was like. I come out from behind a curtain with Simply the Best playing over the speaker system. I loved it, I'll be honest. I love it. Love Italy, love the Italian people. I met a really nice guy there, became good friends, and he sort of got me doing some more talks out there. Been back many times, we've been on holiday there. Love it. I love the Italians, fantastic people. I know we got a couple who listened. Genuinely love you guys, brilliant. Again, went to the Milan Derby, one of the great experience. But the one big thing, when like that first time when I walked out that curtain and noticed in the room, and it was all a bit bizarre with this music going, and obviously you don't speak the language. But I noticed that the average age was much younger, the gambling clientele. So when I'd done things in the UK, without being disrespectful to those of you listening, I'd say without doubt the average age is comfortably over 40. But in that day when I walked out that curtain, all I saw was young faces, and I reckon it was sort of 24 to 27 was the average age of the gambling, and I knew nothing really about how gambling works in Italy or what it did. I look back now and thought I didn't really do my research in that side of it. I was more concerned about how the exchange worked and this, that and the other. Anyway, I did my bit, and we were talking about the exchange, back in laying, liabilities, explaining laying to people who've not used an exchange is always troublesome. You know, you get going, that went on a lot longer than you plan it. And then staking and liabilities, and I did some live trading then. I put 1,000 lay the draw bet on, which gave me a 3K liability at 4.0. So, you know, like the thing yesterday, I didn't do the Zoom with £10 stakes. I staked my money. So I've got a 3K initially red screen up, and a guy put his hands up, and I'm working through an interpreter, And he asked if that steak was usual. And I said, yeah, that's what I steak. And he sort of shook his head and raised his eyebrows, puffed his cheeks out. And he was having a conversation with the interpreter. And I'm just sort of stood there looking at them go back and forwards. And the interpreter then turns to me. And this guy basically said he could never bet at that level. Could never stake that. So we went back and forth, and I basically wanted to know, if he couldn't work up to stake at that level, why was he there? What was his reason for coming? You know, did he come just because he was interested? Did he come because he wants to? And he said, no, he wants to make money at it. And we went back and forth, and I said, you want to make money at it? And but he topped out that his maximum sort of start, I said, what would you stake? And I think he was betting in sort of 5 and 10 euros. And he said his maximum stake would probably be 25 euros. So I was polite, and I was really polite. It's not like I knew people. You know, when I meet you guys in the UK, I can speak a bit more freely because in some way I know most of you. Obviously, we get some newbies who look at me with a bit of horror when I swear, but I could speak more. I couldn't speak freely, really. I was trying to explain very politely that his expectation for perhaps making a living at betting and sticking to 25 euro stakes was going to make the game hard. And trying to explain to him, and we went really on an endless merry-go-round. This was, he's talking to the interpreter, I'm talking to the interpreter, and I'm all I can see is sort of exasperation, him puffing his cheeks. I'm trying to explain to him that if you win money and you reinvest that money, you can put your stakes up with that money, and to the way to look at it is to look at it that you're increasing your stakes with other people's money, you've won it. And he just basically wouldn't have it. He just kept saying, no, not for me, which is fine, absolutely fine. You know, at least he knows at the start. So we had that conversation, and the facts are that, you know, most of you want to make money about it. That is something that you've got to experience. And sometimes I'm better betting for certain people because they don't have that worry and fear of red screens and big stakes. Others like Gertie, for example, you know, he doesn't know I'm going to talk about him, but let's use him as an example. I'm sure he won't mind. Enjoy the thrill of it in the big wins. And to be honest, he hasn't always been like that, Gertie. I remember the first time I met him, and he came to me saying, at the end of the day, he came and said, no word. He said, I'm going to bet XYZ for £400. I'd still remember it now. I don't know whether he will. It's a few years back now. And I said to him, I think that's a little bit excessive. I think you should just start small, build yourself up, blah, blah, blah. Get process. 2 months later, he was asking me for 20 grand because he'd knocked a load of money out. And that's a fact. I don't know whether he remembers that or he'll try tonight, but that is an absolute fact. But he has learned over time, and for sure, his game now is not for me, but he's developed that process and attitude himself, and I quite admire it. Unlike people who gawk at him and wank themselves senseless over it, I look at it for what it is. He's betting X to win X, and the mindset is the same, whether it's £10 or £1,000 or £5,000. He's using winnings to do it. Yes, big balls, some may say. And yes, it's not for me, 15 grand, 20 grand swings in one game. But what you've got to think is, when he wins, like he won at the Cadiz game, he's winning 5, 6, 7 grand a time. So he might do that 4 or 5 times, and then he has a loser, loses 15 grand. So he's still 5, 10, 12 grand up. It's good business. Provided he has the money behind him to sustain that bad run, which comes to all of us, it's good business. But it's the process and mindset is exactly the same. People love it just because there's big sums involved. You know, they get all excited and sit and masturbate over it. Just get a reality on it. And people think I don't like Gertie. I think he's, you know, I don't say anything on here that I wouldn't say to him. I think he's a bit of a nut job. I would say it. I've had a go at him to his face. I think me and him sat in a pub would last 2 minutes. But I have an admiration for how he goes about his betting and has done. As I say, we've had differences. We had a chat once. It was a little bit one way. He agreed with me. Eventually, and since then, it's been good as gold with me. You know, I go back to the Peter Alice. I don't follow him and get involved in his views. I said on here before, I'd rather eat dog shit than listen or indulge him, and that stands. But I like his process. I like the way he goes about it. I like the way he's driven. all those things are positives, and we're all different. You know, we are all different, and this desire by some to tell you there's only one way to do this, and my way is the only way, or you're an idiot, is just utter nonsense. Let people be. I don't involve myself in Gerd's business or betting. If he asks me, I give him advice and help him betting. His views on other things, we're polar opposites. I don't, you know, I'm not saying come and give us a hug, Gerd. Let's talk about it and try and change his mind. And he's not me. He'll have a view on me, I'll have a view on him. But it's the process that he's gone through from first meeting me to starting with those £400 stakes to having a bad run to sort of give me 20 grand to where he is now. I quite admire what he's done in a way. I do quite admire it. And he's probably going to be listening to this going, bloody hell. But that's the difference. You know, it's that thing that if you stake 50 to risk 200, as a lay, you're still risking, if it's 5.0, you're risking 4. Whatever the unit is irrelevant. Provided you've built that money up and you've got it behind you, and that, you know, I talk a lot about scared money. There's people doing this with money they should not be doing with it. I made reference to it last week. But the point of all of this is, as part of this process that I keep on about, to make money at this game, you're not going to do it betting in tennis. But there is no harm starting out there. Learn the ropes. Go through the bad runs on small stakes. Have a plan, but have a plan to build it up, and over time, build your mindset with that to cope, you know, betting at bigger stakes. Live yesterday in that room, sure, some of the guys will probably talked about it when they left. I lost 1,100 quid on one game. Ask the people in there. You know, there was 30 odd people in there. Did I even blink, bat an eyelid, mention it? Nobody can say I did. That's not bravado. That's just 13, 14 years of process, building a process and the staking features into that. You know, I know the runs will come. I know that 12 out of 13 first half goals isn't normal. And I know that, you know, like 3.89 Premier League goals per game wasn't normal. I know that it will spin round. People say it does, you know, and I can say that's experience. That's experience of doing this process and checking things. And I've got systems in place to check everything. So that's it. So I don't know whether you found any of that useful. North London is ours. We're at the top of the league and looking. He hasn't given any bets yet. We've got to listen to him singing because he hasn't given any bets yet. There might be a bet at the end of this. We're at the top of the league and looking down on the nation. Oh, we're joint top. Fucking scousers, sort yourselves out. You're clinging on to joint top. You've got a little asterisk next to your Premier League title, and now you want a bit of joint topness. Dear me, sort yourselves out. Right, I have nothing. I don't have any bets. There's nothing today at all for me. There's no pod horses. It's all a bit foggy and horrible. So I'll be back tomorrow. I hope you enjoyed it. I will be doing more on staking over time, but I hope there was something in there for everybody. At the Spurs. Oh, don't go. Nobody leave. Shut the doors. Nobody leave. Forgot to say, if you're waiting on emails and things, I'm not going to be about today. Sam is at the RSPCA right now. And we have the new arrival. We become parents again. The dog is arriving at sometime around lunchtime. She's bringing the new dog back full time. So I'm spending my day getting the house dog proofed and obviously letting the little one get accustomed to their new surroundings and making sure she's okay. So if you're waiting on anything, you're not going to get it today. I will, normal service will resume tomorrow, Wednesday. Apologies for people waiting, but that is going to be my priority, is getting the little one settled. Right, I am now off at the Spurs.